can't sit inside your room and hope that you're going to get it good on the day. You will find out how much your brain short circuits. If you go in there and do that tomorrow, you're going to blow it out of the park. Hi, welcome to the Ivy League MD podcast. This is episode one, part two. Last time we spoke about studying, what to study in your undergraduate course, how to achieve HDs in your undergraduate course. If you haven't heard that episode, go back and check it out because I think it's really valuable. I shared a lot of things that I wish I had learned earlier in my life and in my career, but now I've managed to pass that on to you. So have a look at that. But today, now, what we're going to talk about is the interview and then the GAMSAT. And we're going to do it in reverse because obviously, or for those of you who don't know, you would do your GAMSAT first and then you would get offered an interview. But we're going to do it reverse just to be a little bit different. So let's just talk about the importance of the interview. Often, I think people really undervalue the interview and they don't take it seriously enough. They consider it just to be an afterthought and it's something that they think, you know, I'm charismatic, I'm an extrovert, I can talk to people and that's fine. There's that kind of school of people, and then there's a school of people who are a little bit introverted, they are more academic, and they think that they can think their way out of the interview. And that's, you know, completely fine. There are some people who can. But I would argue that that is not the majority of people. I think that is the minority of people. And that's okay. We can learn these skills and we can develop them. I want to give you some really broad strokes that are going to help you in your approach to the interview. So the first things first is you need to practice and practice, practice, practice. There's a funny thing that goes on with our physiology. When we are in this situation, we have this fight or flight situation. And because these interviews are not just standard interviews, they are MMIs, which I'll come to in a second, they are terrifying. Even for somebody who is trained in this, it is extremely difficult to have the mental aptitude going at the same time as having your performance aspect going, okay? And so if you don't believe me, I recommend you go and film yourself just doing a random question in the MMI format, and I'm going to talk about that format in a sec. So it's a bunch of different stations where you get 2 or so minutes to read the stem or the question and thinking time, and then 5 minutes to answer. And it could be to a human being or it could be to a camera, which one of my interviews was to a camera. And it's very, very stressful. And it's very difficult to work off of a camera because you don't know if you're getting positive or negative indicators. But I recommend if you think you are good, go and do this cold and you will find out how much your brain short circuits and is unable to come up with a succinct answer. And the other way, apart from obviously practicing, is we want to practice with people that we are scared of. So this is also a little bit tricky to navigate. What you end up finding is everybody has a different opinion about how an interview should go and what is a good interview. And that's completely fine. But I think it's important for you to practice with as many people as possible. That allows you to see the difference in expectations and realize that there is no perfect way. There just tends to be a general framework that will help you. If you practice with somebody that you're afraid of, that will be good in the respect that it'll kind of stimulate this artificial environment of fight or flight, which is what we want to do. But also, I would say, be really, really careful about who you get to practice with. Some people are not very good at giving feedback, and everybody will give you feedback, even if it's perfect. And that's what I would say about doing your practice or practicing with someone just before you're about to go in, like a day or two before. Choose that person wisely, because if you've got a person who is going to say, man, you're really bad at this, you need to do this and that and this, hopefully none of your close friends would do that. But I have known people that the day before the interview, they've spoke to one of these friends and it's freaked them out and they've come to me panicking, and I've looked at their work and we've seen that they're really good. They're 90% there. So we want to build up their confidence towards that day rather than trying to make it completely perfect. If you go in there and do that tomorrow, you're going to blow it out of the park. But because someone had spoke to them at that vulnerable time, it had broken their confidence, you know, in a large way. So just be really cautious of who you get feedback from, because they will give you feedback whether it is warranted or not. Then the other thing about interviews, which is important, and ideally this would have been done years before you've actually applied, but for those of you listening and you're about to have the interview, I'm sorry about this, but those of you who are thinking about applying, what we want to do is we want to integrate all of this extracurricular stuff that we've done, hopefully, in a meaningful, succinct way in our interviews, right? And I'll talk about extracurricular stuff really quickly now and how this can help with your interviews. So what I mean by extracurricular is you're volunteering in a hospital, or you're volunteering with a charity, or you're at the church and you're leading the team, or you're leading your footy teams, things like that. What I want you to do is, and this sounds kind of insane, and you know, this is kind of what I did, is I want you to seek out extracurricular activities that are going to bolster potential interviews. So for me, I volunteered in a hospital. I managed to volunteer for an eye clinic, things like that. I reached out to as many people in my network and then people out of my network as well to try and get, you know, shadowing opportunities and things like that. And what I did was I kept a little journal based on things like teamwork, you know, structures within healthcare, communication within healthcare, patient experience, and looked at the patient-centered care model and things like that. And just journaled interactions that I had and profound moments that I had. Even if it was just a thing saying, you know, that made me feel like I want to be a doctor, or that made me feel like there are challenges in being a doctor. Have that all, that big library of things, so that when I'm coming to making my, going through what interview answers that I want to have, when I'm preparing for my interviews, I've got all of this rich inner life to pull on. And that is where I think the importance of these extracurricular comes in. If you haven't done any medical focused extracurricular, that's totally fine. But you want to try and tailor your answers that are going to have something that's going to, you know, fall within that lens of medical space. So yeah, what can you do now? Like I said, volunteer for charities, you be on the student committee, things like that. And the other benefit of these student committees is that you're going to meet others who know medical students or others who are interested in joining med. And you're going to be able to, you know, have like a little interview group maybe, or have a study group. And you're going to have a little community that you can draw upon when times get tough. On that, be careful with who you are trusting in this space, because medicine is so competitive to get into. You want people who are community minded and not people who are competitively minded. I, in my undergrad, you know, studied with some really fantastically interesting people, but there were also some people who were a little bit more, probably a little bit too focused on themselves and very competitive to the point where it would just make me not want to engage with them because there was too much nervous competitive energy. And you weren't able to share things like, oh, I got a good score in this, because that would influence them feeling upset. You know, and that's not what you want. And also, don't be like that. If you're listening and you're like that, don't be like that. Go get therapy or figure that out yourself. Don't bring other people down. It doesn't help and it looks a bit awkward. And then again, the value of volunteering in the hospitals and things like that, it's preferred because you get to see a healthcare team in that healthcare setting, not just for the interview. It can help you understand that you truly want to be a doctor, whether you do or not. So, GAMSAT. Now, if I'm honest with you, this is not my massive forte. I didn't go out and get 99% in the GAMSAT. It was a very challenging exam for me. I sat it 3 times and I ended up actually getting worse and worse a score the more I studied for it. But to give you context as well, I know a young man in my cohort at medicine who sat it 13 times, 1-3, and he is by far one of the most knowledgeable people in my year that I have witnessed. So it just goes to show that it's not based on your actual intelligence. It's just another test. So for those of you who don't know, Google it, but I'll give you a broad overview. There's section 1, section 2, section 3. Section 1 is like poems and literature that you have to interpret. Section 2 is you need to write 2 essays in 65 minutes. And section 3 is there's a whole bunch of questions that are multi-choice and they're based on chemistry, physics, and biology. And I think the format has recently changed. You don't have to go in for the whole exam now, but it's still traumatizing of an exam because relatively smart. I mean, every time I went into the exam, I think I cried walking home thinking, all right, well, you know, guess medicine's not for me. You should choose another dream. So if you're feeling like that, don't worry. Everybody feels like that. The other thing is as well, the sections are weighted differently for different universities. We'll talk about that when we talk about strategy for applying. So section 3, what I would do is I just use the practice questions. Initially, I would do them untimed, and then closer to the date, I would do them timed. You want to really, really fundamentally understand why you got it wrong. I think the other thing about this is if you don't have science as a background, and you're teaching yourself science, you want to really understand the concepts incredibly well, so well that you're able to identify really quickly what the situation is and then move forward with like the crux of the issue. I found that when I was doing practice questions, because my chem wasn't that good or my maths was my weakest point, I had to really actually start again and teach myself maths. And this comes into what I'm saying as well about being self-reflective in your learning. This whole chat is about being self-reflective. You need to be honest with yourself about your weaknesses. And yeah, I had to teach myself. The point is you want to be able to identify the question situation and then move forward with the crux of the problem. And if you don't have a really strong grasp on physics concepts, like you're not able to identify how an acid and base dissociate and all that kind of stuff, you're going to like waste a lot of time, because I think the timing is like 1 minute and 30 seconds per question. And this comes back to why I think it's good to do tutoring, because yeah, tutoring really allows you to bring that fundamental understanding that you have to explain from different points of view. And if you can teach something, you're going to understand it way, way, way better. So yeah, understanding what you did wrong in these practice questions. And then the resources that I would say that you can utilize. ASA has some, I think they dropped some new, they dropped like a little, like an album, but it was a big deal in the GAMSAT community. But they dropped some new practice questions. Haven't had a chance to check it out. But basically the old practice questions are a little bit out of date. This is my opinion, but they're good to start with. And then I think Des O'Neill would be the closer ones to like the GAMSAT as it is now, how it's evolved. But the thing is, a lot of those questions are from when there was a calculator you could take in, and it is a bit more science focused. So just take that into account. If you can get hold of the Des O'Neill content, I would recommend doing that. And then other free content would be Jesse Osborne. He is a guy on YouTube. Again, I'll link in the show notes. He is a G. He just got into medicine in Uni Sydney a couple of years ago, but he got 99 in section 3. And he's also a tutor. He also does GAMSAT tutoring. I think he's just stopped recently because medicine is too much. But I recommend going and check out all his free YouTube videos. Give him likes, subscribe, just give him some energy, because he's really been doing God's service to the community with that one. And then I don't really want to push too many paid things, but I just want to tell you what I've done and my experience, and you can go with that if you want. So Barry's tutoring is one that I did. I paid for his course. I think it was like $200-something. It was okay. I wasn't mad that I spent the money, but I wasn't out here being like, I would pay it again, mainly because he uses just the ASA practice questions and they're kind of out of date now. But I think it was a good foundation for me because I needed that help with that problem solving. So if that's something that you really, really struggle with, he does reason out the questions really well. And he's obviously a really smart guy as well. I don't know if he's updated it. So basically the course is just him. He's basically filmed a class that he's done in person and then uploaded that. So it's a little bit, sometimes it's a little bit tricky to follow. But yeah, so just that's what I have to say about that. Do what you want. Let me know. Section one, I'll jump around a bit. Section one, I think, is just really tricky to improve on. I was lucky because I have a background in art and theater and things like that. So reading text and understanding points of view and emotions and stuff is not something that is very foreign to me. But I also found, you know, I just scored consistently on that one. Couldn't improve, didn't know how to, but I wasn't too worried about that one. So if anybody has any tips, please let us know. I'd love to pass that on to the community. On section two, the essay section. So this is the approach I took. Again, maybe insane, but whatever. I did an essay every day using the Fraser's GAMSAT quote generator, and I'll pop that in the show notes there. I don't recommend using Fraser's as a tutor thing, not saying that they're bad. I just haven't had an experience with them, or do I know anybody that's had an experience with them? But they have a great quote generator on their website for essays. So I would do that and set a 30-minute time and write an essay. And then the flow that I would go through would be read the day before's essay before I do the next one, and then try and understand what I'm doing wrong, and then try and implement the the corrections in there. Another thing would be get others to read these essays. Very vulnerable. I know for some people who are might be a little bit insecure about their academic writing, but it is really important to do. I think that again comes into that practice thing with the interview. You've got to put yourself out there, okay? You can't sit inside your room and just, you know, hope that you're going to get it good on the day. I know that's quite appealing though. I understand that energy as well. And then the resources I would say for these two, one that's like free or like relatively free is something called Write for Medicine. I think it was like $30 and it gives you a collection of different GAMSAT essays that have been graded. And I'm not clear if it's like people using the GAMSAT or people using the ASR automatic marking thing, or they rewrote their essay from when they were in the exam and they tell us the grade. I can't remember, but I found that to be valuable just from a point of view to be like, okay, what's the standard that I need to write to get at a certain point? And then there's something called 90 plus GAMSAT, and this is like a whole paid course. These guys are like all over Facebook and they're all over YouTube. They run seminars and things like that. And I actually watched a few of them. They have really good information on their blog, on their website. I didn't pay for it. I don't know anybody that's paid for it, but a lot of the stuff that I learned from there for free was really fantastic. So again, I'm not saying that go ahead and pay for it. It's going to be amazing, but you know, I think if I was going to give it another crack, maybe I would have paid for that. But at the same time, that wasn't a weak point of mine necessarily. So I don't know, do what you want, but that's out there. I think that's that might be a decent avenue for you. Okay. And then finally, in the last few minutes, I just want to talk about application for medical school strategy, right? So I don't know if you're like me, but I was on the GAMSAT forum on Reddit quite a bit and on their Discord and things like that. But it got to the point where you kind of need to stay off it and only use it purely for information, because there's so many toxic human beings on there. And they are like, commonly the quotes, people would put things on there like, oh, so I got like a 99 GAMSAT and I have a 7 GPA. And I only got accepted into University of Western Sydney for medicine. Wanted to go to Melbourne and I didn't get in. Is there any point in me even doing medicine? All this kind of stuff, which I think is just so toxic. Or people would say, oh, I got a... Hey, this is Alex from the future just doing the mix. I realize I'm not really conveying exactly what I mean by how toxic the GAMSAT forum is on Reddit. I guess the point I'm trying to make is there's a lot of people that are discouraging other people from applying when they have really competitive scores, or just being critical and trying to boast about their own score in a weird flexy way. So that's all I wanted to say. Continue to enjoy the podcast. Thank you. I think the big problem there as well is they discourage people applying. If you have a GAMSAT score and a GPA score, just apply. But don't go and apply to Uni Melbourne if it's a low score. Preference some lower entrant unis, because you're actually going to utilize, like, because you might actually get in. Some people don't apply and they find out that people have got in with a lower score than they have. I've seen that a few times on GAMSAT. So it comes obvious, but with the organization, know the cutoff dates, preference well, okay? Preference well, what does that mean? Preference well means go ahead and preference the unis that you're actually going to get into. Don't waste spots on Uni Melbourne or somewhere that has got a super high. For instance, Sydney Uni, they have a low GPA, but they have an enormous GAMSAT score, but they don't have an interview. So if you're someone like me who the GAMSAT is not as high, your GPA is better, and you're an interview person, why would I even apply for Sydney Uni? There's no point. Don't try and get sucked into the glamour of these sandstone universities. Just get into medicine, because all that they care about is that you have a medical degree. Everyone becomes an intern. The competitive nature comes later on, and it doesn't matter which university you go to. And to give you a great example of where this is kind of fumbled, I know somebody who got accepted into undergraduate medicine at a university that was relatively new, and they wanted to, well, they gave it up for the desire of getting a spot in a sandstone university. So now all that hard work that they've done through high school is now just basically down the drain, all for this faux prestige thing that doesn't really exist. Yeah, again, look at unis who you are suited for, and not just score-wise. Look at somewhere where you actually would be comfortable going. Try and look at the things that that attract you to unis. Of course, you will go wherever you get accepted. But if you need to live in the city because you just cannot live rurally, or you need to live by the coast, it's medical school is going to be hard. And if you're isolated from your family and you're in a place that you don't want to be, or you're full of people who are, or if you're older and you can't stand young people and you go and do undergrad med, like, you're going to be around 18-year-olds. Don't do that, okay? So just consider those kinds of things. Again, the amount of people that I see who are like, yeah, I'm only gunning for Melbourne Uni and things like that. I just want to cry because I just see they tell me their scores and I just think, man, you're just going to be disappointed in the end. So yeah. Okay, so we talked about the interview. We talked about GAMSAT, some extracurricular activity things that you can do, and the strategy to apply for medicine. I want to know now what other questions that you might have about this process and any interesting things that you feel like I can add value for. Please jump on our website and send a message and let us know. And if you have any questions, feel free to reach out. I really appreciate you listening. Thank you so much for coming along on this journey with me. I will hopefully speak to you next time. Thank you. My name's Alexander, and this is the Ivy League MD podcast.